Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The City of Tulsa and Gilcrease Museum announced a significant change to the planned renovation and expansion of the facility under Vision Tulsa funding this past weekend. After a comprehensive look at the museum and its facilities by their architect Smith Group, the Gilcrease Museum Vision Task Force voted at the end of January to rebuild the museum rather than to renovate. That vote will result in the razing of the original museum and its four additions built over the years, and instead building a new 89,000-square-foot facility, which leaders say will be more efficiently laid out, which will increase overall exhibit space from the current 134,000-square-foot facility, and have up-to-date facilities for managing and preserving the museum's extensive collection, which is valued at an estimated $2 billion. The project will cost $83.6 million in total. That involves $65 million in Vision Tulsa funding, an additional $8.6 million, which was dedicated to the facility from Improve Our Tulsa, as well as a $10 million private grant from the Tandy Foundation. The four-year project of design and construction will result in the museum's closure for some period of time, but a timeline and length of the closure is not yet known, according to my guest today. Susan Neal is the executive director of Gilcrease Museum and also a vice president at the University of Tulsa, which manages the museum and which is also the licensed owner of this radio station. Neal joins me today to talk about the decision to rebuild Gilcrease Museum. Susan Neal, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Gilcrease Museum and the City of Tulsa has announced a big change in what was to be a planned renovation of the Gilcrease Museum to actually rebuild the museum. Can you take us through the decision to rebuild rather than renovate?
I sure can. It was a revelation, quite frankly, to all of us. A rebuild was not ever in the cards when we started down this road. People might remember in the vision process when the council invited projects to be submitted, and they did that on about a 3 to 4 week timeline. And we'd known at the University of Tulsa, since we managed Gilcrease, we knew that we needed additional space, and we also knew that we needed updating. So we did put a concept design in place and moved forward with that, and we also included some improvements for the grounds. That portion took a haircut through the vision process, but we were eventually fortunate enough to be awarded $65 million from the citizens of Tulsa for this project. So because the collection is what is so important to Tulsa and is what is unique to the arts scene here and really throughout the country is that we have this extraordinary collection. So we started with focusing on just the collection, and we hired Gallagher & Associates, and they are a museum design firm out of Washington, D.C. and New York. In Shanghai, of all places, to really work with us on how do we use our collection to be a part of the national conversation. What will make this extraordinary collection relevant not only to, you know, the current generation of museum goers, but the future generation of museum attendees. So we've worked with them for the last year and a half on building those narratives and what exhibitions we should focus on. Then this past summer, it was time for the city to go through its process, because I think it's very important to stress that this is a city-owned facility, and it's public dollars, and it's a public process. So the city named a task force, a citizens task force, to work with the mayor, and they went through the standard city process in hiring an architect, a construction management team, to work with the museum staff.
And that's Smith Group,
and correct? That is Smith Group at the national level, and One Architecture here at the local level. And then Flint Co. was hired as the construction manager.
Now, Smith Group has worked on several of the mall museums in Washington, D.C. They have a unit that does specialize in museum construction and exhibit design. So I guess they were tasked with coming up with a building that will match this narrative that you've already come up with for utilizing the collection.
Right. We knew we didn't want to just build a box or turn the existing structure into a box. We wanted to really focus on the narrative and the exhibits to really change the visitor experience, and then hired the architect. So this summer, Smith Group and One Architecture and Flint Co. were hired, and they were hard at work beginning, I'd say by early October, and they have done a deep, deep dive on what is there in our facility. And as they did that with some equipment that I don't think I had seen in museum examinations, either by the city or by anyone else, they came in and really scanned the Gilcrease facility head to toe, and just really a comprehensive study. And after several months of analysis, presented us with options right after the 1st of January this year. So for the past few weeks, we've just been learning what those options would look like, and then how those options measured or stacked up against a scorecard that they created, what each option would bring to the table to address the must-haves that a museum must have and that a museum cannot live without. You can't be a museum if you aren't going to have these certain prescribed attributes and characteristics. And what we learned is that none of the options other than a rebuild addressed the must-haves. So the responsible thing to do and the most efficient thing to do with the taxpayer dollars was to, even though it's a smaller footprint, that it will actually deliver very well on making Gilcrease finally a true museum, because in the past, starting with the carriage house.
It was originally a carriage house that Mr. Gilcrease put some of his collection in, and
right.
And it was a series of expansions.
Right, exactly. In 1913, he built a carriage house and then a wraparound larger addition in the 40s, then another addition in the 60s, then another addition in the 70s, and the last one was in the mid-80s. And even with all those additions, only about 5% of the Gilcrease collection can be displayed at any one time. Even if the whole museum were Gilcrease collection only, that's about where we'd end up. So I think it's important to note that clearly Tulsa was doing the right thing by the collection in adding more space so that we could actually enjoy this collection. But now that the Smith Group has made it clear that some of it doesn't meet code, some of it doesn't have insulation. One addition was built with all load-bearing walls, so there's really, oh my goodness, the expense to navigate that during a renovation would be incredible. And current-day modern museum standards require that you have a certain level of HVAC and mechanical and electrical that ensures a range of humidity and a range of temperature. And if you can't meet that, then you can't get loans from other institutions, and you can't even begin to take care of your own collection, which is our first and foremost responsibility.
So are those the must-haves you're talking about, or are there other must-haves that are on that list?
Well, the other must-haves were public meeting space, education space, programming space. And although a little bit of that has been, well, some of that has been necessarily compressed, we will still have things that we haven't had in the current day iteration of Gilcrease. And we've never had a dedicated classroom space. And we will have a 2,500 square foot classroom space that will allow us to also have a multi-purpose room for lectures. So it's efficient space, but it's things that we've longed for
now,
and that the community can benefit from.
Right. Now, you are looking at an overall decrease in square footage from about 134,000 square feet to around 89, I guess, as it's envisioned at this point. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And will the exhibit space actually be larger? Because I know with all those additions, you know, in certain cases, you've got huge block walls that go back to the old farmhouse, the carriage house
we
days.
We do have huge block walls, and we also have halls that go
nowhere.
And that's not useful space. That's not space that the public can benefit from. The architect, like I said, they did such a great job in explaining all of this. I wish everyone could have the benefit of that, but they might not want to know all those details. But one detail I found interesting is 37% of the existing 134,000 square feet is just walls. So that doesn't even begin to address the unusable square footage that we currently have due to the large, very large mechanical systems that are that have aged out. They were last installed in the mid-80s. When I was showing architects through the building and certainly construction companies as well, a lot of the MEP, the mechanical and electrical and plumbing, is apparently very antiquated. And what they said, this is the part of these things should be in a museum. So we know that those things needed to be addressed.
So will the exhibit space be the same, larger, or a little smaller?
The exhibit space, the amount of space that we will have for exhibits will be larger by about 6,000 square feet. Plus, we will have open storage opportunities so that throughout the museum, so there will just be a number of different ways for people to access the Gilcrease collection that weren't possible before.
When also, you talk about open display, open storage, that means it's not necessarily available for you to go right up to, but you'll be able to look into a storage space and see things that aren't on display?
That's right. That's right. And most modern museums have open storage where the public, even though there's not items or the objects aren't being incorporated into an exhibit, they are in gallery space and wall space and glass spaces and even in digital spaces where people can learn about them and access them and view them. Mm. In addition to that, the traveling exhibition space that we promised is certainly going to be available. So yes, we're definitely getting more exhibition space.
And of course, anybody who's been to the Gilcrease knows that to see the entire museum, it's a lot of retracing of steps. There's a circuitous sort of, and I assume in a new museum, it will flow naturally. So you sort of take in perhaps with the three sort of markers for your narrative, mm-hmm. maybe you go down one path for one narrative, another path for another, and I assume that will be all worked out. But you'll take a journey in which you're not retracing your steps all the time.
That's exactly right, and that is not available to us now, or available, more importantly, to the visitor. It's not evident where you go next. There's no natural flow. It's a bit of a rabbit warren. And we appreciate the visitors and the Tulsans who support us so much, because they do have to navigate it, and it's not always easy.
Yeah. My guest today is Susan Neal, the Executive Director of Gilcrease Museum and a Vice President at the University of Tulsa. The City of Tulsa and Gilcrease Museum announced a change in the planned renovation of the museum under a Vision Tulsa funding to a complete rebuild of the facility. Now, you'll have $65 million in Vision Tulsa funding.
Okay.
As I understand, about $8.6 million, I think that was for HVAC and
right.
mechanical improvements mm-hmm. and improve our mm-hmm. Tulsa funding.
Yes.
Plus, you have a $10 million private gift. So that means a total budget of about
$83.6 million.
Yeah. Can you build a facility for that? Because I was doing some research on some of the more recent builds. And now Crystal Bridges is one, an iconic architect, built in the bottom of a creek valley mm-hmm. and 200,000 square feet. But that was somewhere, the numbers are not really known, but anywhere from 100 to 150 million. Eli Broad's new museum in Los Angeles was about $140 million for mm-hmm. 50,000 square feet. Now, a lot of that was wasted on this big outside wall, or devoted to the outside mm-hmm. wall that's yeah. sort of iconic, and it was made out of new structures. And it was, but do you think you can build a facility for that amount of money?
So the answer is yes. And here's why I know this to be true. I'm so fortunate to be working with two of the most experienced museum designers and architectural firms in the country. Gallagher and Associates has, like as you noted, planned museums and exhibitions all over the world, actually, as has the Smith Group. Their most recent engagement was with the Museum of the Bible and the African American Museum on the Mall. And the National, I think Gallagher has just been completing the visitor center in Washington, D.C. They know how it works for visitors, and they know what they're doing in the museum industry. So I feel like we are in the best of hands. The figure that sometimes gets used for Crystal Bridges, and as you said, no one knows what that amount is, but inside the museum world, the figure that gets thrown around is over $400 million for the Crystal Bridges. You've heard me say
yeah.
it, but don't quote me, because really no one does know.
Right, right. Well, and I was looking at 990s, and that was for the construction firm, and the architectural firm, and which was listed in their 990s, which is about $100 to $150
million. So those are your fees?
Yeah.
That's just your architectural fees. So I guess that explains why that might be a much larger number. But we know that we can build a quality and wonderful, not just good, but a wonderful museum experience at Gilcrease because we own the land. Lots of times people go into these experiences or these opportunities not knowing what it will take. And fortunately for us as the citizens of Tulsa, our city already owns this land and it is in a beautiful setting. And like I say, their building experience is vast. And when we heard from 32 different museum designers throughout, when the city put out its RFQ, or request for qualifications, we had 32 national, some of the best museum companies in the world, apply for this opportunity and submit. And we chose the Smith Group because they were not only good with renovation, but with new construction as well. They have museum professionals on their team. And like you said, they have an entire branch of their business just dedicated to museums. And then our exhibit designer is exactly that, somebody who is museum design specialist. So we're just in such good hands, and we know it won't just be a good visitor experience, it's going to be a great visitor experience.
Well, you talked about the must-haves for a museum, mainly from the nuts and bolts sort of viewpoint, but in deciding to build a new museum, what are the must-haves given the promises made about the renovation that you felt like this new facility will have to have?
So the mayor and I had numerous talks about that throughout this process. There were two things that everybody was very committed to and were sold throughout the campaign when we were seeking these funds. And the fact that there would be, the promise that there would be more space for the Gilcrease collection, that more of the collection would be accessible and on exhibit, and then and in a permanent way, and then that there would be a large traveling exhibit space that would allow us to actually, when those wonderful exhibits come through that are once-in-a-lifetime experiences, rather than maybe our having to fly to Chicago or Dallas to see them, that we could actually host them.
Or you don't have to take it down half of the permanent collection to house it.
Right. So it's those are the must-haves that this will deliver as well.
Of course, a new front door was also a big part of the promises as well.
And that is in there.
That will have to happen.
That has to happen.
Because you have a whole new house.
We have a whole new house, so we'll definitely be getting a new front door. And the A.R. And Mary Louise Tandy Foundation, with their contribution of $10 million, that will be the Tandy-named venue is in that new lobby and new entrance. And that will be a really great public space.
Do you think the museum will seek additional private funding to augment that amount that you have?
It is entirely within the realm of possibility because so many people have said, this is different. Now we have this opportunity for naming opportunities that heretofore we didn't have. And in a renovation, that might not have been the case. And the other thing is, so much civic leadership in Tulsa and others certainly recognize Gilcrease as our most valuable cultural asset. So if we can take it from great to greater, they will want to have that opportunity. And so, yes, there will be some opportunities to explore that.
Now, once your committees decided or the checkmark sort of recommended itself to building a new facility, how did you go about getting buy-in from the diverse set of stakeholders Gilcrease has? Because as a city-owned facility, you have city government, it's administered by a private university, and you have both local stakeholders here in the community that have such an incredible interest in Gilcrease, but also a whole other set of national stakeholders through your national board. What was the consensus from those points of view when you said it's not going to be a renovation, it's going to be a rebuild?
So this has been a rather abbreviated time to have those communications, and that happens a lot in a public process. Because Gilcrease is publicly owned, as soon as the mayor was aware of this situation and his task force, and he made that recommendation. And I think looking at the numbers, I don't know how anybody could make another decision. It was really very clear.
So you're saying to fix the museum, eat up most of the dollars.
Absolutely.
That you would use for expanding and making a better museum.
We would not have been able to realize any transformation that would be visible to the public for their enjoyment and for their use of Gilcrease. We just pretty much would have been able to take care of all of the things that were wrong or are still challenging us. We're limping through till construction. But that's where that money would have had to have gone. And I think that once the mayor heard this, and like I say, this decision was made by his task force, because it is a publicly owned facility, of course, the mayor wanted to go and visit with the city council and make sure that they could know first. And so he and I spent some time, like I said, this just happened on January 21st. So he and I have spent some time having discussions with the city councilors. And then meanwhile, I've been talking with my board and the national board and university leadership and stakeholders and donors, lots of, you know, Gilcrease members are important. The $25 donor, the person who just has been coming and paying admission or been a longtime fan of Gilcrease Museum, they were just as important to us as somebody who is a $10 million donor. But given this abbreviated time frame and given the fact that it is a public facility and that it was going to be shared with a public entity, we've just had to hurry and communicate as quickly as we can. And so that's how I've spent the last, I'm about to lose my voice. It might not sound that way to you, and you might want me to.
Well, what's been the reaction so far?
Has
it been mixed?
No. And I've been really happy about that. And my conversations have included members of the Thomas Gilcrease family. They are certainly important because they care deeply about the Thomas Gilcrease legacy and what it means to their family and this city. And they are very enthusiastic. We have volunteers who've worked at the museum, and so far their response has been very enthusiastic. I think everybody who has been in, when I say volunteers and staff, this isn't a building to be built for volunteers and staff. It is a building to be enjoyed by the public. But there are no tears being shed by the volunteers and staff that this building is going to come down.
Well, anybody who goes to the museum regularly can see some of the issues.
Right.
I mean, there's been humidity issues.
Right.
And you just know that there are signs that the building structure is not in the best of shape.
Right. And knowing that, reinvesting in that and knowing that it wouldn't be sustainable and that we'd be coming back to try and fix those things again in 5 and 10 years. Again, it was overwhelming evidence in making this decision. But we've done everything we can to communicate and get in front of this story before it broke publicly.
My guest today is Susan Neal, the executive director of Gilcrease Museum. The City of Tulsa and Gilcrease Museum announced a change in the plan renovation of the museum to a complete rebuild of the facility. It will move from the 134,000 square feet facility, which is actually original building and four additions, to a new 89,000 square foot structure. And you anticipate this will be about a 4-year project, but how long do you anticipate that the museum will be closed?
Thanks for that question. I want to stress that the museum is open for business and will be for probably the next year and a half or 2 years while this design phase is underway. It is a 4-year project, but it is for design and construction. So during design, we will be open, and when it's time for the building to come down, obviously we will be closed.
Yeah.
So that will take about 18 months to 2 years.
Do you anticipate that the collection will travel, or will it be housed in alternative venues here in the city, or how will you keep the Gilcrease name in front of the public during the closure?
So a lot of thought has gone into this, knowing that this project was coming and working with museum professionals like Gallagher & Associates and Smith Group. We've also on our own been talking with community partners, other museums, about how they might take some small portion, because we have such a vast collection, that they might want to have one of our current exhibits that would move to their museum. And I think we do have one that is lined up to do that. But we also have a little difficulty not knowing when that is, that it needs to be, that construction will begin. So it's really hard to plan that with another entity. As far as like storage, we have been working on that for some time, and that plan is evolving. But those are some of the big considerations that go into this.
Oftentimes when a museum does close for a renovation or a rebuild, mm-hmm. they will travel their collection to other cities mm-hmm. as a way of getting the name out there to other cities. Do you anticipate that will happen?
Yes. Some of the Gilchrist collection is out on the road all the time.
Sure.
And we will continue to do that. There will come a time, though, that it will be too difficult to make that decision. Most museums schedule their exhibits 2 and 3 and sometimes even 4 and 5 years out. With us not knowing when we are going under construction, it has made it particularly challenging. We are small staff, and so we can manage to keep our exhibits currently on, you know, working on those is a full-time job. To create a traveling exhibit, some museums have exhibition teams and prep teams and registrars dedicated just to create traveling exhibitions. Should all of this work out and the time frame works, we may have that opportunity, but it's just an unknown right now.
All right. Well, I assume the public will have input. I know the city council is going to vote officially to repurpose these funds, even though the mayor says that's not necessarily necessary. He wants to do that in the spirit of transparency.
Yes, and I think it's also being good stewards, and again, like you said, in the spirit of transparency and just making sure the public understands what's going on.
Will there be public input on the design process?
Where that will come in as we get closer to, we're at the very, very beginning. We've just made this decision to abandon this older facility. So yes, there will be a number of public meetings. There will also be a number of public meetings in March and April that are really tuned to exhibition and narrative, that we'll be reaching out to a number of interested people who want to know what we're going to do with the future stories that we'd like to tell. And so we want to include, I think we have 4 or 5 public meetings that we are looking at in March and in early April. We'll be doing outreach with tribal communities and making sure that our narratives reflect our community.
Well, we look forward to that and look forward to what happens down the road with Gilchrist Museum. It sounds like it's an exciting time to be a museum director, if sometimes a slightly frightening one as well, embarking on building a new museum, but we wish you the best. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich. It's been a pleasure.
Susan Neal is the executive director of Gilchrist Museum. The City of Tulsa and Gilchrist Museum announced over the weekend a change in the planned renovation of the museum to a complete rebuild of the facility. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.